What's up, podcast peeps? I've got a hell of an episode for you. This is episode 2 of Podcast in a Backpack with Ben Hohenstatt of the Capital City Weekly. He wanted to interview me for an article he's writing about podcasting. I think the content is going to be really good, even though some of the production value maybe not so much. I'm still having some technical difficulties. This we're running 2 mics, so this is probably why you're going to hear one of our voices on the left side and the other one on the right. Still not sure exactly how that's going to sound. I hope you guys like it. And audio is the only way that you can consume this one because the video was completely buggered. So please remember that I don't put any kind of commercials in these podcasts. So the only thing that I ask is like, share, or even just listen. I really appreciate all your attention. And now on to episode 2 with Ben Hohenstatt.
All right. And Ben Hohenstatt. Yes. We're live.
All right.
We are in the Juno Empire offices right now. This is a little conference room. And Ben, here's your mic.
Thank you.
What are we doing here today, sir?
Today we are talking about podcasting in Juno.
Okay.
So the first question would be, what gets you interested in podcasting? Why did you decide to strike out at this?
Oh, man. I guess the real answer, it's free attention. So often in media, if you want to get any attention, you have to pay for it, even if it's something as small as a business card, you know, coming up and getting that link. But with social media, media has become democratized, whether it's the written word, whether it's video, whether it's audio. And I heard a guy named Gary Vaynerchuk go off about how sound, voice, was going to be the next big frontier because voice is passively consumed. If you're reading a newspaper, you know, you can't read a newspaper and drive down the highway. Or, you know, you shouldn't be watching a video and driving down the highway, but I'm sure some people do it. Whereas voice, it lends itself really well to doing something, whether it's working out or, in my case, making art or driving or what have you. And I think that if I start now, that in a decade, I'm going to have something that has the level of attention that's equal to mainstream media.
Are there any podcasts that you listen to that you think are in the vein of something you're trying to do? This is more for the purposes of the article on podcasting I'm working on,
right,
to help people get a flavor. They might say, oh, I know and like that. I might be interested in this.
Okay. I'd say my favorite podcast is the Gary V Audio Experience. It's so directed towards people who are marketing, towards people who are advertising, creatives. But outside of that, I don't consume a whole lot just because he's just putting out so much content and I haven't found anybody who's really able to kind of cut through the noise in the same way. And then also doesn't follow it up with buy my $1,000 ebook or sign up for this masterclass or what have you. It's very forthright with the information and talks about underpriced attention, which I'm super interested in right now.
Right. That makes sense. Now, as a reporter, a lot of times it's easy to get people to agree to an interview, harder to get them to appear in a photograph, harder still to get them appear in video.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that there's just a pretty much a vertical line and difficulty in booking people for podcasts?
Oh.
Or are they more willing than you would think?
You know, it really depends. And I've had the opportunity of interviewing a lot of people between Streets of Juno and the radio. And there are some people who are very comfortable in video and then very not comfortable in audio. And the one thing that I found that kind of connects all those people is that they're really physically attractive. I think that has something to do with it, but I think also people just have natural ways in which they're comfortable expressing themselves. So I, for example, I spent a lot of time on the written word in college, and I really didn't enjoy it. But voice and video is a way where I can take a thought that's really raw, and I can just kind of put it out there and see how people react to it, and then it doesn't take me a whole lot of time. It's like I can flesh out a thought, slap on some hashtags, and then put some copy on a post, and get that done in about 5 minutes. Whereas if I was going to do the same thing in the written word, like I'd really want to be careful about my phrasing because it's not so acceptedly off the cuff, unless it's Donald Trump's Twitter.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
As someone who is on the opposite side of the approach, I've done some video stuff, I've done some audio stuff, but I'm hyper aware that my natural speaking voice doesn't sit at a compelling audio level, usually. I recently was writing about the Midwinter Vocal Festival that's happening.
Okay.
And got talked into doing a vocal lesson, which out of my comfort zone, I can't carry a tune in a bucket, but that's how I know I need to do something. And he pointed out the same thing, like, okay, you talk flat, you're clearly at a comfort level, I'm making a conscious effort to not fall into vocal fry or other bad habits, but as someone who is aware of what good recording practices should sound like, I would find that side of podcasting just intimidating. But I suppose with your background, you're not going into it with those thoughts necessarily. You're kind of a little more well-oiled for the approach.
Man, well-oiled, that's a way to think about it. That's so funny. I'm trying to actually relate that to my own experience because I don't feel well-oiled. I feel very naive. I think that naivete actually helps podcasting because you're willing to take risks that a corporation or a business would be scared to. I know there's a lot of people out there who would really benefit from having a podcast, but they don't want to because they're scared of the potential ramifications of telling the truth on social. And that could be for, you know, any number of reasons, but I think ultimately you have to break yourself from being tied to other people's expectations and opinions of you if you're ever going to tell your truth. And that's the whole point of podcasting. If you and I were to create a podcast that had some other ulterior motive, whether it was to, let's say we wanted to sell granola bars. Mm-hmm. If we weren't upfront with the audience about that, it's like, look, we're a granola bar company. We want to sell these granola bars. Then I think you're really breaking a lot of trust with the audience, and that leads them to convert less to whatever it is you want them to do. And I still haven't figured out how I want to deploy the audience, because that's always a question that you have to ask. Like, once you get a bunch of people's attention, what are you going to do with it? But right now I'm really content with adding to the historical record of Juno, because I think that's really what we have the opportunity for, is because of this democratization of media, I can find a story that maybe within the jumble of news, maybe it's not even newsworthy for a traditional news media, but we could make a compelling story on social that people would be interested in, because people are naturally interested in their neighbors. And later on down the line, you know, if that person has a grandkid who wants to know more about, guaranteed, Ben, one of your descendants, if you have any, will watch this.
Yeah, that's something I do become hyper aware of as someone who has a series, an ever-growing byline pile, where I'm like, if anyone ever wants to know what was I paying attention to, what was I researching, who was I talking to professionally, there's a long written record of it that does not exist for my parents, grandparents. I don't know what cafeteria worker from Brooklyn, New York was doing in 1958. That would be my grandmother, but, you know, someone could certainly find out pretty easily where I was. And
we're going to be the first generation that really has that. I don't know what my dad was doing in 1988 when he had me, but these days, like, you can find your own birth on social media. Like, if you were born this year, there's a good chance there's a lot of content around that event that I don't have access to anymore.
Yeah, as someone whose friends are, you know, they're having kids and things, I do think about the ethics of that quite a bit.
Okay, talk.
Would I want my own childhood thoroughly documented on social media? The dumb things you say as a toddler, the relatively benign but probably destructive mischief. Like, I get to hear the family stories of things that I did. Like, notably, I smeared Vaseline all over a tube TV because I was left unsupervised. I poured pickle juice in a kaleidoscope. I don't know why I had access to either of those objects. It's like toddler Mad Libs. But if there were social media posts to shame me immemorial, I don't know how I would feel about that. And I think that the current generation of youngsters is going to, for better or worse, be able to dig up their actions as a 2.5-year-old.
You know, I think that's a fair point, but that generation of youngsters is also going to have 2 or 3 generations of youngsters that are doing the same recorded stuff. Because when I was 13, I was going to JDHS, I was smoking pot in the graveyard. If that was recorded and kept, that could be embarrassing, but I then also did just admit it, you know, on a podcast. I'm genuinely just not afraid of what other people think. And I believe that as we see more of, you know, the stupid or the dark side of humanity, whether they're young or not, we're going to end up being more empathetic to the fact that people mess up. Because I think right now social media has got this, I want to call it a charge, in that you create a social media account and you want to be the public relations officer of your own life. Here's our wedding photos. Here's everything that looks nice about our family without all the stuff that's deeper. So I think the more that we get at kind of the deeper, the darker, things like mental illness, we're actually going to learn more really about the human species instead of what our cultural ideals are of the species at any given time.
Right. Yeah, I think there is a place for sharing where it certainly does that and it does illuminate. But I go back to the little kid. I'm like, maybe you grow up to be a well-adjusted, open, kind-hearted, empathetic adult, but maybe you want to opt out of the whole thing.
When you say opt out of the whole thing,
like social media.
Okay, not like life.
No, not life itself. Well, okay. I mean, but anyway, it's more you could, by the time they're old enough to have a hard-lined opinion and be the person who can make their decision, like you said, they could have someone who's, you know, at least ideally their biggest advocate and their parents, essentially incorporating them into right. their public relations releases to the world to be digitally preserved forever, more or less, which makes my mind reel a little bit. For probably 85% of people, they're going to be fine with it. They're going to age and be glad and feel more and more comfortable in their own skin, hopefully. But I'm like, there's enough people I know that only want to carry cash money, don't do the social media thing.
Yeah. How many of those people, though, are young? And when I say young, I mean like under 60.
Probably not an overwhelming majority. Yeah. I have met a few people I can think of who were doing a thing where they had abandoned smartphones for flip phones that were my age, mid, early 20s.
Yeah.
And I found that compelling.
For sure.
I admired it to the point where I was looking into the feasibility of only maintaining a work smartphone. And there's if you look it up on Kickstarter, there's like a micro industry of dumb phones, they call it. One that only uses like the paper white screen technology, so you can't send photos. You can text, you can call, and that's about it.
The jitterbug.
Jitterbug? I wish I could recall the exact name of the thing I was looking at, because they intentionally make it look sleek and square and rock-like, and it's clearly tapping into the same consumer impulses as an iPhone, but making the exact opposite public statement of, I don't want to be connected or streamlined or doing the same thing, which it is what it is.
You know, I think it's easy to look at the examples of people who want to forego that technology, but even in the 60s and 70s, when television was kind of overtaking radio as the medium, there were people that refused to have TVs. And I'm sure there were even radio executives who were like, oh, you know, I know someone who'd, they don't even want a TV. Like, we don't have to worry about this. It's a fad, but it's cyclical. And right now, 80% of all people in Alaska, last I checked, at least 80% have a Facebook account. I mean, that's basically market saturation right there. I don't know if 80% of the people are going to watch CNN this month.
Almost assuredly not. Yeah, it's the closest thing. It's minion memes on Facebook are the closest thing to a monoculture we currently have, which is interesting.
Yeah.
But so just to reel back around more toward podcasting, you mentioned how you feel more people could benefit by sharing facets of their life through podcasts. Let's say that they do feel so inclined. What are some of the initial hurdles that you got to clear that you encountered?
Mindset, for one, you really cannot give a fuck what other people think. And that is something that I truly believe in my generation. It's scary. Because we came up in a system where you, just out of survival in high school, you had to care what people thought, right? So we've still got this mentality that the opinion of the, you know, 300 or 400 people in our peer group matter, but they don't, right? As you start to build an audience, you get so much negativity just for putting yourself out there. It doesn't even have to be anything that's particularly controversial. Just the notion of, oh, well, all that person wants is attention. That in itself is a negative statement, right? And I'm sure that people could look at this and they could be like, well, that Glenn Ojard guy, he's a total narcissist. He just loves to hear himself talk. It's true. I do love to hear myself talk. But I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing to look at the mediums of attention and then capitalize on them. But I think it could really hurt people if they're not prepared for it. If, just throwing out an example, let's say there was an 18-year-old girl who realizes that if she shows visibly sexual pictures on her social media accounts, it gets more likes. If she's decided that what she wants to do with that social media is to get likes, her behavior is going to go more towards that. It, you know, if that's her value system. If it turns out in 10 years, you know, that someone whose opinion she cares about looks at her social media and says, you know, I don't like the way that you're portrayed here, so you can't do something that you wanted to do, whether it's get a job or I don't know. Just hypothetically, I think that has the potential to throw a lot of confusion and guilt into the system. But if you go into it with the recognition that whatever judgment is put on you is ultimately revealing of the person who's judging you, then you're going to be able to make it. I can't tell you how many times I'll get a comment of someone who they have something, you know, even if it's something like, you make flea market art, you know, because I paint. So they'll look at my art and they'll be like, your art's trash. And then I'll look at their profile and they don't make art and they're not publishing art and they're not an artist. So they don't really know anything about the market. But then you start digging a little deeper and either they're not putting out anything about their personal lives, or the things that they are putting out are so deeply negative, you realize how much unhappiness there is in the system. So if you're going to wade through it, it's like working with the public. 5% of the people you're going to deal with are just pissed. And it has nothing to do with you. It's like that adage, somebody could walk up to you in the street, shoot you in the face, and it would still have nothing to do with you. That's what I think you need most of all, just mentally, to get through it.
Right.
And then as far as like tech, you need to understand that it's a race to the bottom.
Right.
So like right now, we're on episode 2 of the Streets of Juno podcast. I have one cable attached to the soundboard because I don't have a Mac system, so the soundboard's not working up to par, which means I'm using this microphone to record my voice, which isn't great, but it's still going to hit the channel. We're still going to make contextual content that generations down the line, your descendants and my descendants are going to get value from. And realistically, we don't need the soundboard, we don't need the laptop, we don't even need the tripod. If you had enough video space and I had enough video space on our cell phones, we could just use the headphone jacks that come with it, record each other, unify the video, and suddenly we've got a podcast. And we've all got this technology in our pockets. So that is, it's also a mindset thing, is just to realize the abundance, you know, that Ronald Reagan, the computer that he ran the entire, you know, the most powerful country in the free world, the computer system that he ran it on is less powerful than what we have in our pocket.
Right. I think in high school, when you get your TI-83, that's everyone's favorite fact, is it's less powerful than the calculations that worked for the Apollo missions.
Isn't that crazy?
It's nuts.
Yep. So that's what we're working with. And I think if you've got that mindset that other people's opinions don't matter, and then you also have the mindset of, I need to get this out as much as possible, as fast as possible, and as contextually relevant to each platform as possible, then that's what's going to matter the most. Like, you probably notice we're filming vertical.
Right.
Because this is going on social. And my YouTube channel sucks. I've got 4 subscribers on my YouTube channel, but I've got like 1,500 on Facebook. So we make it for Facebook.
That makes sense.
Yeah. Because people rather hold their phone vertically. You know?
That's true. So people don't browse in landscape mode.
That's it. So, and when you're promoting for your podcast, you know, let's say we were on Instagram or Facebook or Snapchat, for each of those, you'd want to make content that's relevant for those platforms, which is simply saying, hey, Facebook, tomorrow I'm going to have a podcast coming out, and that be it. Just acknowledging the platform that you're on is going to help. So not giving a crap about individual opinions, yet giving a crap about the total experience. And then just racing to the bottom, because here's the big one. So many people don't start because what they have as their pinnacle of what they want to achieve is already years in the making. Anybody who looks up this podcast is going to be like, wow, this is some pretty ghetto podcasting. But if they were trying to start their first podcast and they were to look at episode 100, they might not ever reach that. Well, they wouldn't reach that goal immediately. And I think that can be very discomforting. But the first time you try something always sucks. If you were to try, I don't know if you skateboard, but if you were trying to ollie today, you might fail. but if you kept at it...
There's no might. I would fail to ollie. I did in middle school. I would today. And yep. I would fail.
But I guarantee that if you made it a social media post and it's like, I'm going to learn to ollie in 2019, and the first day you make a video... and it sucks, by the end of 2019, nobody is going to be looking at that first video and being like, wow, Ben really sucks. You know, it's such a long game. And I think it's really easy to look at the short-term metrics like likes, shares, views, when in reality, that doesn't matter. What matters is the value that you would create in the heart of another human being. You know, just the fact that you're interested in podcasting, we're having this interview. Now, if I see you in Super Bear, I'm going to be like, hey, Ben,
right?
What's going on? I mean, that in itself is so nice. Like, and it might in the end convert over to, oh, hey, I want to buy this guy's painting. Or it might not. It might just convert over to something like, hey, I'm going to friend this guy on Facebook and maybe I'll share one of his posts. Or it might just convert into nothing but one extra person who knows who you are. And my overall goal by the end of my lifetime is to be one of the most relevant artists in Alaska and to just use every medium that I can get good on. So I have to collect these kind of good vibes with people just to be relevant.
And then is there any perfectionism impulse, production quality impulse?
Man.
Because I would worry tremendously about that. If I was in that foot, I would want my bumper music. I would want... It's something that I would never espouse this individual, but if you listen to like a Rush Limbaugh show, because
right.
one time just I'm like, I don't even know what that sounds like. I should hear that one day. Mm-hmm. And you look it up and you hear some of the big name artists, they license for that or somehow are able to play. It just, I go, wow, there is a level of production to even the most odious things that I found fundamentally impressive to a degree.
I think that the easiest counterpoint to that would be something like, do you ever look on Facebook the videos of street fights?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we're males. It's probably one of the coolest things on Facebook.
Or World Star.
Yes, funny. Exactly. Yeah. So what you have there is something that's really basic, super low production, but the content is so compelling, whether or not it's like instant karma or, you know, because the bully gets what he deserves or, you know, maybe something really crazy happens. But the production level is usually terrible, but the views are enormous.
Right.
And obviously it's worked out for World Star.
Right. I'm a big music guy. I think I like early Mountain Goats albums where you can hear the tape recorder whirring in the background. And it's just like, yep, that's part of the texture. But either the characters and the songs or the melodies are strong enough that, you know, you listen to All Hail West Texas anyway. So.
Yeah. I think that production value in social is something that people shoot for and they don't realize everything they get with it. Because it looks clean, but it also looks fake. I remember that during the election season, there was this social media sponsored post from Lieutenant Governor Kevin Meyer. And it was all of these like super canned vanilla sequences, you know, him walking and talking with a friend or him like, you know, just holding a gun for the sake of holding a gun. And I caught the part where he put his finger in the trigger hole and then they got rid of that sponsored video. But the video itself, it just looks so campy, whereas I think if a politician really wanted to appeal to people on that platform, they could just put their phone in selfie style. And I've told politicians this, and Wade Bryson, thank you so much for taking my advice, just hit record, take a selfie video, and just spit your truth. It doesn't have to be perfect. It can be, you know, you can have false starts or ums or uhs or what have you, because that's what's going to let people know that it's from the heart.
Yeah. So often topic, but similar to that, because super PACs aren't allowed to collaborate with the political campaign.
Yeah.
In 2016, I don't know if you saw any of this, Ted Cruz just uploaded hours and hours of raw footage of him doing mundane tasks to YouTube so that the super PACs would have access to cut their own promotional ads.
Nice.
And there's just like bizarre moments in the deep cuts, like just jump a few hours in and see what was going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that it captured any unbridled moments of authenticity, but I mean, it was just like, it was interesting.
I remember seeing a picture of Ted Cruz doing like phone bank fundraising for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And that seems so honest, you know, because he was just so deflated. And I thought that was like a beautiful portrait of that job.
Let's see. So I'm trying to circle back, if I can, somewhat to the trying to think. So we covered the fundamentals people are going to want to have in their mind, the bare necessity gear. Oh, uploading it to a place where people can actually find it. I think a lot of folks, I mean, I've seen Juno-related or adjacent podcasts just plopped on SoundCloud.
Right.
I've found them in Stitcher in doing research for this. Yep. I found them in iTunes. Well, I don't know if they prefer Apple Music or iTunes these days, but I guess it's fundamentally the same platform. Was it much of a gatekeeping effort to land in those, or do you just submit an application and it's reviewed fairly quickly?
Anchor is this wonderful app that once you upload your podcast to that, it will then work to distribute it among other platforms. So without even trying, I got put on Stitcher, Apple, and there was one more, Google Play, and Spotify. So those four, like right off the bat. I guess the real answer is, where does your audience live? I think right now the people that I'm most interested in marketing to live in Facebook. I think the younger generation is moving more to Instagram. There's, you know, there's all sorts of reasons why Facebook is becoming less enticing, whether it's sponsored ads or grandma's racist theories or, you know, God knows what.
Which I find odd because Instagram is, of course, owned by Facebook, and you would think of this simplified idea of a photo and a caption would appeal to a less tech-savvy audience. But I'm waiting.
They're coming.
That crossover. Yeah.
Grandma's coming to Instagram. If Instagram hadn't stolen stories, she'd be in Snapchat. As soon as they have the reason to be there, and for Facebook it was, I want to see the picture of my grandkids. So if the millennials move all the pictures of the grandkids to Instagram, grandma's coming over there too. My mom was one of those grandmas who was like, I don't need Instagram, I already have Facebook. And then she realized that I treated Facebook and Instagram very differently, because Facebook, I'm very oriented towards Streets of Juno, whereas Instagram is almost like a personal diary. So, I mean, the flavors are just totally different. So she's moved over to Instagram and starts playing there now, because that's where she can see that content. And it'll just flow, and maybe in 2 years, there'll be a different social media platform that people will go to, and you know, maybe it'll be TikTok or...
Yeah, that's what I wonder. It seems Facebook's perch at the top is pretty unprecedented in this run of things. Yep. I don't know if I see Instagram supplanting it. My mom did join Instagram so she could see pictures of my dog.
Yeah.
My dog's Instagram is what drew her in. And of course, he needs a dedicated one so that I don't force my friends and associates to see nothing but pictures.
Wait, you have an Instagram account for your dog?
Oh, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, Archie the Wonder Pup.
I'm going to have to follow. Do you know Butters in Alaska?
I do not.
Okay, that's a really good dog profile here in Juneau. And then there's also Dutchie the German Shepherd. But yeah, Butters has got like 25,000 subscribers.
Ooh, I think poor Archie's sitting at like 300 and change,
not bad.
Maybe.
No. That's about what I got.
He's got five times as many as me, but I don't post anything. Archie posts record reviews and stuff. He's a dog with taste.
Oh, that's clever. Because that's the thing, is like, I've always wondered how, other than the cuteness of a dog photo, how do you provide an audience member value? But if it's record reviews, that's brilliant.
Record reviews sometimes, bad jokes, whatever. Cool. Yeah.
Sweet.
Yeah, exactly. Nice. I figured it's not my name attached to it, so I can inflict some of my lighter sensibility. Mm-hmm. Out there.
Well, and you know, Ben, even if it was your name, I think we're getting to the point where people understand that the other humans around them are multifaceted.
Right.
So if you were like, you know, Clark Kent, actually a really good analogy for this.
Yes.
If you're Clark Kent during the day and then, you know, Archie during your off hours, I think you could use your name. But I mean, it, you know.
Oh, yeah. No. Well, yeah. In this case, it was more like, some days I'm like posting four pictures of a dog and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't need, my college buddies don't want to see that much of my dog. They can opt into this or they can, I'm very into the autonomy of my friends and loved ones.
And then you should also remember that if you post four times a day, there's a good chance that your friends, even if they're following, are only going to see half those posts.
That's true.
So
that's true.
For Instagram, I try to post three or four times a day as far as like the main vertical timeline posts. And then for the story posts, I'll go as high as like 25 just to kind of get the rant, you know, because I rant on Instagram. So
fair enough.
And it's good for, you know, 30 people, which I think is enough. That's another thing. If you're going to get into podcasting, you have to understand the value of one audience member, because I think we get so lost in either, you know, hitting 100 views or 1,000 views or 10 or a million or what have you, that we forget that each of those views is a person and the relationship that could be built there. Like, imagine if 10 years down the line, maybe it's another paper, you know, you're looking at a job at another paper, and they're like, all right, we want to use this as a reference for kind of who this guy is. You know, you have no idea who that audience member is going to be. It could be the person deciding your future. It could just be somebody, you know, who's never going to meet you.
Right.
But like today, for example, I had an audience member give me about $200 worth of spray paint just because I said that that's the one thing that I actually could use. And the audience came through. And so even if that video had just gotten that one person's view, that would have been a huge return on investment for a little post. So
that makes sense.
Yeah, the value of one, that's super important.
Well, I think that satisfies my curiosity about this particular podcast. I've talked to a few others and am trying to, it won't be comprehensive by any means, but talking to people at different stages of the podcast game, whether they have been doing it for a few years and have a dedicated audience, they're just starting up and recording on their phone. But I don't know. I wish there were metrics to attach to it, because my perception is that it's a growing network of podcasters, but it's tough to put to really take the pulse of that. What's your impression? You have any thoughts on that to kind of close it out?
I watched a video from this Australian guy who said that radio was still the most consumed medium, but podcasting in the last, you know, like 10 years had gone from 0 to 8%. That's the amount of people that listen exclusively to podcasts, which, you know, would lead you to believe that, yes, it's growing, but it's not going to be one of those things that everybody's listening to podcasts tomorrow. I think what's really going to do it, it's the cars. Because like my Subaru, for example, I can hook my little phone up to the Bluetooth. I can listen to a podcast. I can listen to whatever I want on demand, no commercials, or, you know, whatever commercials are delayed in the podcast. And I think the more ways that people are integrating with technology in that fashion, the more it's going to make sense because of the lower friction. And that's something that's really important if you're talking about social too, is if the Juno Empire was to publish an article, let's say they give a short paragraph intro in the copy of your social post, and then someone clicks to it and then they have to go to the Juno Empire page. That's added friction, right?
Right. People want to follow the path of least resistance.
Exactly.
Just like electricity.
So when doing podcasting, you have to recognize that for these platforms like Spotify or Stitcher, you're asking someone, if you're promoting it on Facebook, to go through that friction. So any technological or social advancement that reduces the level of friction between the end consumer and your podcast is going to increase the rate of podcast listening. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
It's just common sense. But yeah, this is great. This is so weird. I'm not usually the one talking, but I've done a lot of talking today.
Yeah, you've done a good job.
You feeling good?
Yeah, I'm feeling good.
Okay. This is great. This is like, okay, well, we'll wrap it up. Thank you so much, Ben.
Yeah, thank you for taking the time. Glad that you brought your setup and glad we got to do the Metacast here.
Metacast. Ooh, I like that.
All right, podcast friends, that is going to wrap up episode 2. If you would, please give the Streets of Juno podcast in a backpack a like, a share, and maybe even hit me up on Facebook. Tell me which platform you're consuming this on. Thank you so much for your attention. Until next time, peace.